This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from today's date, 19th of January. It is a Wednesday, created with love and affection and passion by our producer, Isa Havilio. And we got a lot of energy interviews today because Brandy Scott is being a Girl Scout down at the World Future Energy Summit. She landed a biggie. Jens Madrian is the head of energy at NEOM Energy, the massive new mega city, the giga project in Saudi Arabia. They want it to be 100% sustainable energy. How on earth do you do that in a petro economy like Saudi Arabia? Well, Jens has been explaining it all to Brandy Scott. Staying with energy, the guys from Siemens, the big German energy company, explaining how they are getting rid of single-use plastics. And Aldar, the biggest developer in the nation's capital. Aldar Development's Jonathan Emery talking about why they're building a 2 billion dirham sustainable city on Yas Island. All of that plus Philip Bohoshi of Magnet talking about the boom in venture capital here in the UAE. It's a really belting bite-sized business breakfast today, if I do say so myself. First up though, Serena Kelly has your big stories.
Morning guys.
Let's get some more detail on those big stories. So many questions coming in about the Houthi attack in Abu Dhabi and the fallout from that. What can you tell us?
So following on from all the discussions yesterday, the UAE has requested a meeting of the UN Security Council now. It is to address the Houthi terrorist attacks in Abu Dhabi that left three people dead and six injured. So in a letter to the UN Security Council president for the month of January, the UAE asserted that the January 17th attack was a flagrant violation of international law and urged the council to unequivocally condemn the Houthi attack with one voice. And meanwhile, world leaders have come forward to condemn those attacks on civilians in the capital. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi and Deputy Supreme Commander of the UAE Armed Forces, has taken many, many calls, including one from the Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. He affirmed Egypt's support for the UAE and its rejection of any threat to its security or stability. We spoke of comments from the United Nations yesterday, and now the European Union has also strongly condemned that attack in Abu Dhabi as well. But we'll be watching, obviously, as this story does develop.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, in other news, big changes to the travel schedule for Emirates. One song you're not going to be hearing today stepping off an Emirates flight is this.
I only came for 2 days of playing, but every time I come, I always wind up staying. This the type of town I can spend a few days in. Miami, the city that keeps the roof blazing.
Party in the city where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn.
Welcome to my room. Bienvenido.
Why are we not going to be hearing that Will Smith classic?
Because Emirates Airline has suspended flights to 9 US destinations starting today. Miami is one of them. Why? It is due to safety concerns linked to the 5G mobile network services that are currently being rolled out at certain airports in the United States. So Emirates shared an update on their website. So the flights that have been affected: Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Miami, Newark, Orlando, San Francisco, and Seattle. So these will be suspended from today, January 19th, until further notice. Flights to New York, though, LA, and Washington, D.C., these will continue to operate as scheduled. So Emirates, not the only airline taking these precautionary measures. A whole host of other international airlines as well. Japan's two major airlines have also taken similar action. And the Air and New Center team have reached out to Etihad Airways, and they've a spokesperson has said that they will get back to us as soon as possible. But just to give you a bit more background, so the U.S. Federal Aviation Administrator, they issued a warning. Potential 5G interference could affect height readings because it relies on radio signals which are similar to those used by planes. Airlines Boeing and Airbus are worried the mobile technology will interfere with navigation systems. So it's definitely something that we will be keeping across for you. US President Biden's reportedly agreed to delay deployment near some airports, but we will be watching this space for you.
Tom, you were looking at this one yesterday, so you did give passengers fair warning. What kind of reaction are we getting from A, the airlines in America, but B, the telephone companies?
A little bit of frustration, I think, on both behalves, in the sense that, you know, this is not a volcano eruption that none of us foresaw or anything like that. This is something that has been planned for quite some time, and the fact that it comes down to the 11th hour for the suspensions and the cancellations of flights is frustrating for passengers that are booked onto those flights. It's frustrating for both the companies as well, because they haven't been able to get the reassurances from the technology companies, but equally from the TECON companies, who are going, well, come on, guys, you know, 40 countries around the world have rolled out this 5G technology, and they're not seeing the issues and the doomsday scenarios that you're predicting. So, but then again, you know, it's people's safety, isn't it? So you can't go just say, can we just give it a go? Well, no, not if you've got 300 people in a 747 above you, I suppose.
Other stories we're looking at today. Serena, as I look at you, over your right shoulder, I see the Mobility Pavilion, and over your left shoulder, I see the Gambia Pavilion. That is because we're broadcasting from Expo 2020 Dubai today, and you've got an update on what's happening down at Expo.
That's right. So in case you missed it, the Expo 2020 Dubai Run 2 set to take place this weekend, January 22nd. So we had one back in November of last year. So like last time, you'll actually be taken on a route through the expo site. There's 3, 5, or 10 kilometers. The event's open to everybody. And you'll also, if you're participating, you will get free tickets to Expo 2020 Dubai for the run day. There are a number of other community sports events taking place in Expo this month, including the Expo 2020 Dubai Running Club event. That's at Expo Park January 23rd and then January 30th as well. But it's open to everybody. But do get on the website and app for Expo 2020 Dubai, because I believe you might need to register for that Dubai Run too. Do we have time for another Expo tip?
Go on.
We already know visitors under 18 years old can enter for free. But did you know kids under 8 can eat for free?
What?
Yep. Kids under 8 can eat for free, but it's only select restaurants. And if you want to know the list of those restaurants where you can go and take your kids under 8 to eat for free, you need to get on the Aero News Centre website.
Happy days. Now, the Grammys have a new date.
That's right. So basically, the 64th Grammys, new date's been announced because January 31st, the ceremony postponed due to COVID-19, of course. So the Recording Academy have confirmed the award show will now take place April 3rd in Las Vegas. And I believe talk show host and comedian Trevor Noah is still due to host the event as well.
I'm seeing that Billie Eilish's album Happier Than Ever is the favourite at the moment to take up the top gong.
Oh, liking that.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Aero News Centre app.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, we are. The World Future Energy Summit is ongoing down in Abu Dhabi at the moment. It is going all the way. Last day today, isn't it? Last day today.
I think they're wrapping up today, yeah.
Yeah, Monday through to Wednesday.
Yeah, just as you turn up in the capital, they're going to be putting away the tables.
Going there with the old juice of hazard, alarms going off left, right and centre. They will be packing up and then the golfers move in. The World Future Energy Expo and Forum is taking place down at ADNEC at the moment, Abu Dhabi, until the end of play today. The event playing a pivotal role in global renewable energy development. So it's an annual meeting. It's a meeting point, if you like, for governments, for energy companies, utilities and innovators. Puts new thinking, ideas and technologies centre stage to drive the transition into clean energy. Brandy's been down there all week for us. If you want more information, you can find it on their very good website, worldfutureenergysummit.com. She's been down there talking to people about, well, the future of energy, basically. And it doesn't get much more futuristic than NEOM, the Giga Project, the 26,500 square kilometre smart city being built in Arabia. That's right, let's just say that once more time. 26,500 square kilometres. Needs to be powered, however, and it needs to be powered sustainably. Jens Madrien is the Executive Director of Energy at NEOM. He sat down with Brandy and told her how you go about building the energy grid of the future.
We are building a 100% renewable energy system from scratch, which is based obviously on 100% renewable generation, but also from a system perspective entails a number of latest digital technologies and innovative features.
What's going to make up the energy mix for NEOM?
We're going to be basing it predominantly on solar and wind energy as it looks like right now. We are building pump hydro storage to be able to balance the system. And this will hopefully bring us up to a point where later technologies will kick in the 2030s.
One obvious question is, why go 100% renewable? Saudi Arabia, not short of a fossil fuel energy source or two.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But as you saw at COP26, Saudi Arabia made a clear statement towards a journey of a net zero carbon future. And we are the spearhead of Saudi Arabia in this regard. We are leading the journey that you can come from a fossil fueled environment into one which is 100% based on renewables.
Does that mean that by the time NEOM opens, it will all be renewable?
I mean, we'll have a transition period into this, obviously. The goal is to be 100% renewable by 2030. Right now, we are not. We are using grid power, as everyone else does, to power it up. But the transition plan is clear, and it's not just a statement of ambition. It's actually a living fact to which we gear our plans to.
So give me an idea of the scale we're going to be talking for this. How much energy is NEOM going to have to provide for itself and its people?
I mean, this is a great question in particular, as we don't know yet how the uptake is, in particular with residential and industrial customers. Can't go obviously into details, but I can share as much as that we have a lot of requests coming in particular from the industrial side. You're well aware that we are building the largest green hydrogen plant in NEOM together with regional partners, 2,000 megawatts, which hasn't been built before as well. And if you just take that degree of ambition to the rest of NEOM, I think you would be looking in the right direction of size.
Let's talk wind. Do you have the wind?
Absolutely, we do. If you look in particular in the Gulf of Aqaba and in the region near Aqaba, we have wind speeds, capacity factors of 41%, which is very high. You usually get these only offshore, typically. There are some of it, so let's say roughly 8 to 10 gigawatts, but we would love to have more. So yes, we have wind, but if we're going to go very, very large on demand, we will need to find alternatives what complements solar in the future, like battery systems, flexibility systems, and demand-side response.
How much is all of this going to cost?
It's going to be probably not the most inexpensive project. That said, it is our goal to produce not just 100% renewable energy, but also at lowest levelized cost of energy. And given the trend downwards, in particular around renewables for wind and solar, we are pretty confident that we are able to offer competitive prices.
Can you give me any idea of the prices that you're coming in at the moment, maybe some of the pitches that you're coming in at for what this energy is going to cost?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I'm able to do that at this point in time, because currently a lot of it is existing on sketch boards. Mm-hmm. And we have estimates, obviously, what plants are costing now. The first solar plants and wind farms are going to go live end of 25, early 26. So it's still some time. So on that one, I think you need to wait.
What about the regulatory framework? Are you having to create your own regulatory framework for these new energy industries?
Absolutely, and it's a fantastic question. You see, I've been operating a lot in the European context, and typically business models were adapted towards the existing regulatory framework. As we are creating everything from scratch, it doesn't apply only for the renewable energy system, it also applies for the regulation around it. And this time around, we're trying to create a system which is then ultimately supported by a regulatory framework exactly for this purpose.
You alluded to new technologies that might not even be operational yet that will be used by the time NEOM is open. What kind of ideas do you have your eyes on?
Yeah, so you need to be, in a way, if you think about writing a book, it's not that we know kind of the final outcome of the book and have the plot ready to go, and now it's just the work of writing. We are sort of in chapter 2 or 3, and we have no idea what the outcome exactly is going to look like. I think the idea is not to fall into this trap of constantly wanting to seek for certainty, seeking for forecasting and clarity, but actually embracing the uncertainty and almost generating curiosity to drive us to the next levels. And that's why innovation is absolutely core to the story in making 100% renewable energy system work.
That was Jens Madryn, the Executive Director of Energy at NEOM, speaking to Brandy Scott, live down at the World Future Energy Summit.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right then, let's get more detail on the booming venture capital market here in the Middle East. Joining us on the line, I'm delighted to say, is Philip Bahoshi. He is the founder and CEO of Magnet, a research company that tracks these things. Philip, good morning. Nice speaking to you.
Good morning. Good to speak to you too.
So a 276% increase in venture capital deals in the wider Middle East region over the past 12 months or so. What's the story, Philip?
Indeed. I think what you're seeing is replicating the global phenomena. Last year, given the onset of the pandemic, was a risk-off environment where investors really focused on their portfolio companies. Capital continued to accumulate for different VC funds. The risk appetite for venture capital continued to increase. And I think that this year you basically saw investors coming back into the market, deploying disposable capital into startups, tech companies proving through the pandemic period that they can successfully grow their companies and solve the problems that exist in the wider economy. And I think it's really a risk-on environment for VC in 2021.
Okay, so it's a good news story. Let's break it down into its different component parts. You say it's more than just a Middle East story. You're defining it, and I haven't heard this phrase before, EVMs, which is emerging venture market. So it's the Middle East, yeah, where we are, but it's also Africa to the west and Pakistan and Turkey to the north and the east as well. Why is this a kind of homogenous market that you look at?
Thanks for pointing that out. Indeed, that's something that we're very excited about. Scale is the name of the game. And what we have seen historically is to get to the big unicorn stories, the growth stories and the success stories for founders, employees and investors. Tech companies need to look beyond geographical borders and beyond the Middle East into other markets and vice versa. And therefore, what we've looked to focus on is not emerging markets, because many of the economies that we have in these geographies that you've mentioned are developed markets, but emerging venture markets, because they're not quite as developed as the US and Europe, which saw huge growth in 2021, but they are developing in that space. And what we have also seen, which characterizes that, is growth across all of the geographies that you mentioned of Africa, Middle East, Pakistan, and Turkey. But what I'm excited about most is cross-pollination. We saw a Nigerian company buy a Qatari startup. We saw a UAE-based company buy a Turkish startup. We saw a UAE-based company buy a Pakistani startup. And that's just acquisitions. There is also capital flows in terms of investment that help these companies potentially become an emerging venture market company, and then hopefully see companies coming out of these regions become global companies.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the mega deals. You say there were a few mega deals over the past year or so. Egypt had a mega deal. The UAE had a mega deal. Saudi Arabia had a mega deal as well. What was the mega deal here in the UAE?
Just to put into context, what is a mega deal? So interestingly, we've been speaking for a few years. If we went back 4 years ago, Careem and Souq were the only type of companies in the region that were able to command an investment of greater than $100 million. So when we used to do our research, there used to be a specific section called Careem and Souq. We then changed that in line with international benchmarks and highlighted companies that raised $100 million worth of capital. And here in the UAE, Kitopi raised $415 million, the largest investment round of 2021, which saw participation from the likes of SoftBank in the region. And another company in the UAE was Pure Harvest Smart Farms, who I believe have been on your show, they raised $65 million, not quite a mega deal, but another example of a large deal here in the region. And the other companies in the region that raised mega deals accounted for 31% of all the capital in the Middle East and North Africa. So they are very highly regarded in terms of growth stories.
Is anybody making money on these deals? Investing is the easy bit, isn't it, Philip? If you've got the cash, you can write a check. It's getting a return on that investment. I mean, obviously, by definition, we don't know yet if people are going to make money on their investments in Katopi, the cloud kitchen company, or Pure Harvest Smart Farms, the agriculture company. But what's been the track record generally? What can you tell us about the return on investment for these venture capital funds here?
Great question. I think it's still too early to tell, unfortunately, because to get a return as opposed to a paper return, an actual realized return, a liquidity event needs to happen. And that means a merger, an acquisition, or an IPO. Now, the positive thing is that last year we saw 35 exits of companies, i.e. acquisitions or listings, which was double the amount of 2020 and higher than the record amount of 2019. Not only that, we saw creative instruments being used, the likes of the SPACs, where Anrami and both Swivel were able to use SPAC vehicles to list on international markets. And in Jahez, we saw the first IPO listing for the region. However, to see real ROI for many of the investors who deployed this capital, we're likely to have to see an acceleration of these liquidity events in the years to come.
I mean, for every success story like a Kareem or an Anrami, there's a company that faces challenges like a Fetcher. Does that put people off?
I think it's all part of the learning lesson. You have to learn from the failures that exist. I think the employees of the companies will still have a learning lesson of the journey that they've been at that company. We shouldn't shy away from failure here in the region. There's always been a slight stigma towards companies failing. But as long as the companies, the employees, the investors, even the governments are able to learn from the reasons and the logic as to why a company potentially failed, I think we're richer for it. And to say that other ecosystems in the world didn't have failures would be wrong. And therefore, it's for us to continue to learn from that and grow moving forward. And I know that specifically here in the UAE, a lot of policies and government initiatives are in place to try and help develop and prosper the ecosystem at large.
20 seconds left, Philip. Let's talk about you. Magnet raised $1 million a while ago. We reported on that. What's next for Magnet, which essentially, I call it a research company. Where are you going this year?
Absolutely. So we're a data and research platform. Our goal is to further expand geographically and add other geographies to the research that we're looking at and to go deeper into the research itself. Our goal is to set the target of getting valuations of all of these companies on the platform in the next 6 months.
Good luck with that, Philip. Great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed. That is the founder and CEO of Magnet, the research company, talking about the booming venture capital market here in the Middle East and the wider region, up 267% last year.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Aldar, biggest developer in Abu Dhabi. It's a big deal for them, and they are doing their bit. Yesterday, we heard about how they want to reduce energy consumption in their existing buildings or existing assets by about 20%. Today, we're going to hear about new build, new developments, and how they want to build stuff in a more sustainable way. It's a great idea in theory, but as Kermit the Frog will tell you, it is easier said than done.
It's not easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things.
So how are they going to do it? Well, as we mentioned, Aldar has tied up with the guys behind Dubai's Sustainable City to launch a version in Abu Dhabi on Yas Island. Now, Brandy's had a very fast-paced conversation on the busy floor of the World Future Energy Summit with Jonathan Emery, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Aldar Development, about what they've got planned and how COVID is changing the way that floor plans are designed for new developments. This is what he told her.
We're building Sustainable City for Abu Dhabi, taking the best of Diamond Developers and Aldar together and learning from Sustainable City Dubai, improving on that for our customers here in Abu Dhabi.
What will you be doing the same as Sustainable City Dubai, and what will you be doing different?
I mean, speaking to the people who live in Sustainable City Dubai, and hopefully I'm not one of them, but feedback is it's an awesome place to live. The sustainability credentials are real, and they spent 10 years, 15 years finessing that model to be, not only a great place to live, but actually producing some great outcomes. So we want to take that, replicate that, and just improve it slightly here. So a lot of it will be the same. Obviously, we'll be upgrading the materiality, the production capacity of, say, the vertical farms. So we'll be taking sort of the latest technologies and understanding to make it, you know, an improved model. The accommodation will also be tweaked for the market here. So a few more villas, a few less apartments. But the same components: retail, school, equestrian centre, autism centre, and obviously great accommodation.
So when you say improving some of the materials, etc., can you expand on that for me?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, we're all working towards net carbon zero. And, you know, part of that is about reducing the embodied carbon in the construction process and then about the operational efficiency of the villas in the wider community. Now, over time, diamond developers and all the supply chain have worked out how to do this more efficiently. And, you know, so we'll be taking all those learnings, whether it's about, you know, low carbon concrete, whether it's about food production and how we get vertical farms to work better through to the lights and the water and the irrigation. All those little tweaks add up to be, you know, quite a big difference, which improves the cost, the affordability of the accommodation, and reduces the running cost for the consumer.
What is the cost of building the project? Talk to me about your capex.
The cost is about 2 billion dirhams. That's what we're anticipating. I mean, we've got to work through final details, but that's the round number.
And what's the scale of the project?
Scale is 864 units of accommodation at the moment, which is made up of apartments and villas.
Timeframe,
we're going to release this to customers probably summer, autumn of this year, start construction at the end of the year, and it's a 30-month construction build.
So where does this fit in terms of affordable housing? We've seen some interesting things happen to prices for villas, etc.
Yep.
In the last 18 months. There's a big drive across the country and in Abu Dhabi to provide affordable housing. Give me an idea of the scale we're talking and where you fit in that.
Yeah, so you know, what's important, and you know, one of the key attractions for Aldar for this joint venture is about meeting our customer need. We did a pretty good job last year of diversifying our products, so, you know, from more the affordable accommodation and more of the villa type, which we've seen people sort of orientate towards with lockdown, etc., up to the more sort of luxurious opportunity, and primarily based in our two key destinations of Yas and Shariat Island at the moment. Sustainable City Abu Dhabi will fit within the Yas product, and will be priced between the Noyas that we saw launched last year and up towards sort of the Yas Acres, which is the more expensive as well. So it's a middle-priced product, and obviously depending on the unit size and configuration, they'll be arranged within that as well.
What's middle-priced?
Not actually finalised yet, but we'll be looking at, you know, starting price of about, you know, 500,000 dirhams will start you off, and all the way up to sort of 5-6 million, depending on the size of the villas.
And how has COVID changed the way that you're designing villas, etc.? People's needs have changed, working from home, schooling from home. Has it changed how you design a floor plan?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed so many different things in how one goes about sort of organising a community, even where people want to live, you know, in terms of, you know, not being so tied to the more urban destinations. And I think that's partly why Yas and Shariat have become more attractive. In terms of the actual villa types, yeah, all of the villas we're trying to, and you know, smaller units, we're trying to make sort of more flexible spaces for people to sort of be able to find some quiet space to work, whether it's home study or whether it's homework, depending on, you know, your age profile. And also, of course, for the different members of the family to be working sort of at home at the same time. So acoustics are something that's sort of come into play, and sort of physical separation with sort of flexible sort of moving walls as well. Access to outside space. So I think, you know, a green space and increasingly a drive for, you know, more sort of nature. So sort of fresh air component, you know, being able to have, you know, wind movement through villas, sort of more of a natural cooling whenever that's possible. Also demand in terms of, you know, the cost of operations, because people are spending more time at home, you know, they're seeing the bills go up, and, you know, we'll see that's something we need to be more conscious of. Technology also, I think people have become more aware of technology just through, you know, Zoom and the world moving on, and therefore how technology plays with the operational cost of the accommodation is increasingly being utilised to manage people's enjoyment of the space.
Love that interview. Fascinating insights from Jonathan Emery. You just heard from him, Chief Executive Officer of Aldar Development, speaking to Brandy in Abu Dhabi.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Yeah, Brandy's been knocking it out of the park, hasn't she?
Hasn't she? Does. Busy, busy, busy. Because she is live for us down at the World Future Energy Summit. Nice story of one company walking the sustainable walk from the floor of the World Future Energy Summit. Now, Siemens Energy has gone single-use plastic free across its Middle East offices. Brandy sat down, or certainly got the opportunity, to speak to Manuel Kern, who is the head of new energy at Siemens Energy, and asked by saying, or started by asking, how you start implementing that kind of change.
First of all, by making a decision and then stick to it and motivate the employees to go the way.
What's the biggest challenge in doing this?
Now, the biggest challenge is that it's mostly behavioral aspects, and through the pandemic we even got a bit on the wrong path, because we started to increasingly use plastics for obvious reasons. But that shouldn't stop us from really thinking about what sustainability means and go the extra mile, even though if it's complicated and painful. And we said there will be no perfect time to do it, so let's do it now.
What largely are you replacing single-use plastics with? Give me an idea of the kind of things you're doing.
Yeah, the most is actually food items, huh? But there are also other stationery and these kind of things. It's really amazing how much plastic waste we generate in our day-to-day operations without even noticing it. So it's pretty much little things. I think it also will not stop at the office. It's if we make people more conscious about the matter. Ideally, we manage to motivate them to also question a bit how we act at home or in our sports club or outside. So ideally, we manage to keep a bigger ball rolling and motivate others to join.
Does it cost money to do this, or does it save money?
I think money is not the key aspect here. Yeah? It's little money that is involved in the way how we process food in our coffee cups at work. Yeah? It's more about effort and getting people in a position to make conscious decisions about what we are doing.
COVID has, though, brought a lot more single-use plastics. A lot of coffee shops, for example, won't accept the reusable cups. We've got the plastic gloves everywhere. How do you deal with that?
Now, there is probably an order of what you can get rid of easy and what is a bit more difficult. But specifically in food items and how we bring in things, it's really interesting. It's also about if you gather a larger group. So if we say it's a Siemens Energy office that we don't want to have the plastic in, do we get into the position to put pressure on these guys who deliver food? You know, on our little suppliers around us, because we have to address them and ask them, hey, we don't want that. What can you do for us? Yeah, because we are also customers.
Have you had that conversation with the delivery guys? What's it been like?
Actually, I mean, with some of them, it's super complicated because they say yes, and then it's super hard to actually convince them of doing different. But the smaller shops around us, they will be open. And then again, it's about persistence. Yeah.
Have you actually got some of your suppliers and some of the people you use to change?
Not yet. So, I mean, when we do our central procurement, then we specify, yeah? Convincing the coffee shop around the corner to get rid of the plastic lid, different story. But that will come. Yeah, it's like all the sustainability things. You have your scope 1, 2, 3 items, and as you fix one after the other, you increase the pressure on the rest of the supply chain.
It's the voice of Manuel Kuhn, isn't it? He's from Siemens Energy, talking about getting rid of single-use plastics in their Middle East offices.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.